Thank you, Dave, and it's an honor to be here with the panel and with all of you in this room on this important topic. And it's a particular honor to represent the citizens of Tennessee who, as Dave put it, are in the midst of the same tremendous conversation from many, many different perspectives on global climate change and what it might mean. And to have a chance to share where we are as a state in the context of Cindy and Gloria and what you've already heard is indeed an honor. It's also an honor for me. I'll just take a personal moment. State Representative Philip Pinion is in the audience. As Commissioner Nicely mentioned this morning, Philip is retiring after many years of dedicated state service. Chairman Pinion serves as the chairman of our House Transportation Committee in Tennessee and has been a part of much of the discussion that I'll be talking about here, so it's rather appropriate, Chairman, to have you here. Secondly, I would do just a very quick plug. This may come up later in the discussion. AASHTO has published a primer on transportation and climate change, and listening to Cindy and to Gloria and some of the definitional issues, I highly recommend this as something that can be of use. What I would like to talk about on behalf of our state is the fact that we have identified a problem, but that the solutions are multiple and they're complex. Again, as Dave said, this is a tremendous conversation. The perspective will focus more on public response because ultimately, at the end of the day, state departments of transportation, like TDOT, are accountable very directly to the citizens of the state, and the dialogue that's going on about global climate change can't take place in one fashion in the state capital and somewhere else in counties and cities across the state. The focus here will be on TDOT. We were asked to talk about the departments of transportation. There is a bigger conversation, but I'd like to focus primarily on our department and what we're doing in Tennessee and see how this fits with the dialogue that's underway. Just a few points, the fact that the problem is real and there. I think we all are spending more time talking about context, and I think Tennessee is at the heart of our southeastern United States region. Everyone in this room, perhaps Florida, maybe even more, know that we are still dealing with issues of growth. That growth rate has been significant over the last decade and before. We are basically a region of the country with relatively low-density development and highway networks to service those low-density developments. Gloria pointed this out. And we have a significant contribution from our region to the nation's VMT. Another way to look at it, and I'm going to be leading into a theme that will be perhaps a little different, and that is the connection between global climate change and energy. But clearly, with our rapid growth, we have had a rapid growth in energy demand. Our southeast region has perhaps the highest per capita electricity consumption in our country. Our energy intensity in the way we live, everything from air conditioning to travel. And an interesting statistic our friends at EPA like to talk about is the fact that we in the southeast have, and I love the language on this, we have the lowest market penetration of ENERGY STAR products, computers, appliances, and so on. I guess that means in some other places the penetration is greater and people make those purchases accordingly. I think the point here is that we are in a part of the country, and Tennessee is very much a part of that, where energy consumption is a unique phenomenon in comparison with other parts of the country. When you map that, and we've all seen these before, I'll talk in a moment about what we're trying to do to get data sources that are consistent, but when you look at that, if you look at the CO2 emissions going back to 2002, and the patterns would only be continued today, there's not much debate, but what certainly states like Tennessee and our friends in the southeast are very much a part of the contribution to greenhouse gases measured primarily as CO2 emissions. Now I'd like to turn a little bit to some analysis that we have done. I thought that Gloria's point, well, Cindy and Gloria both on standardizing data is critical. We at the Department of Transportation went out and looked around and realized, like was said, anecdotal data is very, very available. We contracted with E.H. Peckin and Associates, and with through them a subcontract with Cambridge Systematics to develop an inventory of greenhouse gas emissions in Tennessee so that as the debate continues, we would have at least a benchmark that would allow us to talk in some authoritative way about the patterns of greenhouse gas emissions and what their sources are. If you take a look at this, you can just get a quick glance, and I'm not sure we're that different than other parts of the Southeast, certainly, but you can see that transportation and electricity consumption, by the way, that's not power generation, that's the calculation of electricity consumption, are the two largest consumers, but we are actually higher than the national average with both of those. So we know we have anything that's a national pattern, we have it and more in Tennessee. And then if we look at the sector again and look at the growth rate, this I think is a rather startling statistic. It makes the obvious point that transportation contributions, greenhouse gas contributions, are a tremendous contribution and are growing. The interesting one is the electricity, that consumption-based electricity statistic I showed you before, that is actually decreasing. And the suggestion there is that we have probably done a better job of energy conservation in our residential and our business communities than we have in the transportation industry. That's a rather significant reverse. If you look at that bottom line, you can see it's actually diminished to some extent. I think we want to talk more about that as the discussion goes ahead. Here's another way to look at the growth in greenhouse gas emissions by sector. Again, there's a lot of little lines on that map. I would, or on that graph. Look at the light blue at the bottom is electricity consumption based. That's what I was mentioning a moment ago. It's not growing. If you look at residential and construction industry fuel uses, you'll see it's about steady. That's non-electric residential. But look at green. That's the transportation sector in Tennessee. And you can see that the projections that Peckham has used to look at the future suggest that transportation is growing. Now, let me say this, and we've talked with them. The factors that were used in this analysis in Tennessee precede the spiking of gasoline and diesel price increases. And so I would suggest these projections may be altered somewhat, although Peckham and others are saying, and I think you've heard something along these lines already, that 10% increase in the cost of travel only has about a 1% impact on VMT. And I think we all know those numbers are all now out there, and we're not quite sure what patterns are going to emerge. If you move forward to where we go with this, what are we doing in Tennessee with those kinds of trends? And there's much more that we could talk about, but Dave is a taskmaster on number of slides and time, so we're going to move quickly. I would, as I mentioned a moment ago, focus on the Tennessee Department of Transportation and our 11 MPO partners. As Gloria just pointed out, much of the planning responsibility, as you'll see in a moment, that we feel is critical to begin to look at the possible impacts of different strategies on greenhouse gas emissions are very much a part of the core business function of the MPO activity in transportation planning. Now, we just unabashedly on our committee stole from each other. And it started with Gloria having the three-legged stool, and then Cindy had the three-legged stool.
No, actually.
It even started before
Steve
that.
Steve Winkleman and Environmental Advocate had a three-legged stool.
Anyway, not to say, we have a federal highway and a consultant plagiarism example right here at TDOT, because I would like to sort of emphasize in the main points that remain, that our sense of where we're going right now in Tennessee is really a four-legged stool. We see it, that TDOT's role in defining this issue is pretty much conceptualized in these four areas. Number one is defining the issue itself. Number two, building the partnerships. We've talked a little bit about that. Number three really goes back to the discussion about planning and our practices with our MPO partners in planning. And number four, TDOT's own operation, something that we talked about just a moment ago. Helping to define the issue. There's no doubt at all that the inconvenient truth is still inconvenient. And that doesn't mean that people are stupid, people are ignorant, people are blind. It simply means this is a very complex issue, and it relates, as we've already heard, to both science and to behavior. And so it's still an inconvenient topic to wrestle with. In Tennessee, the leadership of Governor Bredesen, who, by the way, has a physics degree, which may help explain this, but a very popular governor in our state in the midst of his second term, was to focus heavily on the energy-climate change connection and not label global climate change as the issue, but rather focus on what we all know is the science, which is that energy is very much related to greenhouse gas emissions. And in 2006, the governor created an alternative fuels task force. Now, this is the governor that makes it very clear that corn-based ethanol is a dead end. So don't misunderstand here. The governor's point in creating the alternative fuels task force was to talk about the issue of fuel. And this, again, was before the spiking in fuel prices. Talk about the issue of fuel, particularly, obviously, fossil-based fuel, and begin to look at ways in which that issue can be linked to other sectors in our economy. And in Tennessee, as I'm sure in other places, a particularly important part of the economy was the agricultural sector. And so in the task force on alternative fuels, a tremendous amount of attention was paid to both biodiesel and to ethanol. And in terms of ethanol, cellulosic ethanol. I won't bore you with the details. They're rather exciting, but a partnership with the University of Tennessee and the Oak Ridge National Labs and the state of Tennessee, and now with DuPont has come on board, there's a heavy, heavy move in the direction of the creation of non-fossil-based fuel, particularly ethanol, and replace the corn-based source that we have today. And then the fascinating approach of soybean production and the creation of biodiesel. The important point here is this wasn't sidestepping the greenhouse gas issue. It's simply saying let's move into this in an area where there are alliances and partnerships that might be willing to come on board, and then as we get further into the research, that we would have an alliance that might not polarize the issues as we have seen in other places. The governor then moved forward with that this year and created a task force on energy. That task force has just begun to meet with some very, very high-level technical leadership. But the important thing is that if you listen to the subgroups of that task force, you can see this integrating approach dealing with defining the issue. Public utilities, including TVA, business, building and construction trades and industry, research, environmental advocacy groups, the state legislature, state government and the agencies of state government, transportation, economic development, tourism, agriculture, and so forth, as well as our general services and those agencies. So we're a part of a process of defining the issue, but the definition is not quite the polarizing definition that some have experienced in global climate change. Building partnerships, the second leg of that stool. This is pretty straightforward. I'll just highlight a couple of things. The transportation connection and how we relate to land use and to energy consumption, we can't overestimate the importance of repeating that over and over again, particularly to citizens who are familiar with some of those connections. Commissioner Nicely created an Environmental Advisory Council, and I think that particularly relates to having dialogue with the environmental community in our state to avoid the very kind of polarization that we've talked about. And in particular, we're heavily involved in the conformity and the NEPA discussion. And the environmental community is standing with us, and certainly with what you heard from Federal Highway Administration, this is not a NEPA and a conformity issue. The nature of the emissions themselves don't lend themselves to that. I mentioned the other state agencies involved through the governor's two task forces, the MPOs and their focus on land use planning and mobility issues, the environmental community, transit community, could say a lot there, but they're very much involved with us, and they're very realistic about the numbers. That you heard earlier. The planning community, the American Planning Association state chapter and others that have arms throughout the rural and small communities as well as the metropolitan communities in Tennessee. And then through that, a whole other meeting topic, the media and the public. And this goes very much to the point. From a TDOT point of view, we simply put it planning before projects. And greenhouse gas emissions and the impact of our activities on global climate conditions is a broader context than individual project considerations. And that slippery slope of conformity determination and EIS incorporation is a very dangerous thing, and we stand ready with our federal partners and all of you to make sure that we do not address this issue through those channels, because it will be a sea anchor that will actually turn the ship around probably. Technology is only a part of the answer from our perspective, and we're staying away from the first three points because they're really kind of out of the domain of the state DOT. We hope fuel-efficient vehicles, and I'll come back and talk about the governor in that in a moment. The focus, clearly from our point of view, has to be the planning process as it relates to VMT, and obviously the connection of vehicle miles of travel to land use, and also the planning connection, and we can't forget our friends in economic development and the utility business, the whole issue of infrastructure and infrastructure costs, because land use is not a function only of transportation or vice versa, but infrastructure, water and sewer, schools, and so forth. And then I will say this. Some of you still may think of context-sensitive solution as a label. We see context-sensitive solution as a way to do our business. And if it doesn't apply to greenhouse gas emissions and global climate change, then what does it apply to? So in our context-sensitive solution mindset, working with citizens and MPOs and our partners, we talk about this. We feel that's a far more useful approach than putting it into some kind of regulatory document. And then let's don't forget to remind everybody of the experiences that we've had. Our citizens who have long trips, who are paying more for fuel, who do choke when the air is not clean, we have to continually link this back to the experiences that people have every day. And I'm about there, Dave. See, we've been conditioned on all these phone calls. Anyway, the fourth leg of the stool, and I'm finished, but the fourth leg of the stool is setting an example. And our commissioner, and I'm sure there are commissioners all through SASHTO, holds us up as number one. If we aren't doing it, we have no business to talk to other people about doing it, whatever it is, whether it's wearing seat belts, whether it's our personal health and safety, whatever it may be. And so the example, and you can see some links back to the task forces that I mentioned a moment ago, we are using biodiesel and ethanol everywhere we can in our state fleet, everywhere we can. There are some issues there, and right now, in fact, if you follow prices, we're paying more for biodiesel. And I think it's an important stand that we're taking. We're willing to pay more for biodiesel because of the impacts it has on emissions. And furthermore, it's pushing that relationship that I talked about a moment ago. We've done demonstration grants trying to maximize and leverage our CMAQ funds in our non-attainment areas. We're always embarrassed we have CMAQ money. But we have CMAQ money if, from our non-attainment status, and doing demonstration grants in terms of diesel retrofits, school bus retrofits. We do off-road construction pilot partnership with our road building industry, and we're now working with the trucking industry on auxiliary power units. Again, these relate, they're small, itty-bitty steps, but we're involved in the dialogue with those other sectors, which in the long run is going to be important dialogue in greenhouse gas emissions and what we're going to do about it. A particularly interesting topic is the establishment, again, working with our partners and with other states in the Southeast, and some of you I know in this room have been involved in our discussion. The governor got real interested in us setting Green Island corridors on our interstates that crisscross our state so that nobody would ever drive more than 100 miles and not be able to buy ethanol or biodiesel. And then use our interstate signage to indicate where those are. We'll be putting locations on our annual state maps and working then with our brother and sister states around us to maybe put in motion a pattern that would let motorists, as this unfolds and more effective ethanol, for example, is available, be able to know predictably where they can refuel, starting with the interstates. And we're in the process now of using CMAQ money with grant conditions attached to help retailers and distributors put those tanks in the ground and do that signage. There's a particularly interesting one that we're involved with Kentucky and with Alabama as well as Indiana, a sort of biofuel logoing of I-65 as kind of a pilot. So some of you may see that and be involved in that. And then to wrap up, looking at the state fleet, I don't know how other states are. I think I do, actually. Other state agencies, our other departments, our executive departments, the state university system are kind of interesting when it comes to their behavior patterns. But we're trying to use our TDOT example as a way to do alternative fuel conversion for the entire state fleet and then also then use that as leverage into yet another generation as the technology becomes available. And I'll just take a quick sidetrack on that. Governor Bredesen announced as Nissan North America opened its new facility. It's been in Nashville over a year, 2 years, but their new headquarters facility is now opened. And if you followed, you'll know that Nissan has decided to kind of leapfrog the hybrid generation and go straight into all electric vehicles as its primary strategic thrust for alternative fuels. And the governor and the CEO of International Nissan made a fascinating announcement of a partnership with the state of Tennessee, with the university, with TVA, and with Nissan to begin to get into the whole network planning for recharge stations. And if you let your mind work with that one a little bit, it's kind of a neat problem. I mean, we all just assume when they're available, we can plug them in at home. Well, no, you'll know the range of where you're going. Anyway, so that's an example of, I think, where we see a state partnership looking at the alternative fuel, in this case moving completely beyond fossil fuels in terms of the vehicles. We still have to address the stationary sources. And then finally, the state is a large employer, and we're working hard at TDOT with our local governments, with our transit authorities. In Nashville, for example, all state employees ride, many of you know this probably from your experience, but ride the Metropolitan Transit Authority free with little fare cards. And we've worked with some local governments on parking policies. We're looking now with the energy costs as they are, we're looking at the issue of flexible work hours. We are a large employer. State government's a large employer, a TDOT is a DOT is a large employer. And are we setting a good example as we look at maybe what we used to call, I guess we still call, demand management strategies to assist in that area? So the Energy Task Force then is this comprehensive multi-agency, multi-sector gathering of people that are wrestling with these issues. TDOT is a part of that. We see that kind of dialogue, that part of the conversation, as critical next steps. We have no declared state greenhouse gas emission goal. We have no state greenhouse gas emission task force. We are not a coastal state, so we're not worrying about sea level rise. I'm not to be parochial. But I think that in its direction, our state is moving into the issue, and I hope this has been helpful as you see us moving into the issue in some ways using channels and techniques that have been with us for some time. Thank you very much.